Well, now tell me then, you then went to the Boston Convention and were nominated
1920,
and you were nominated for its General Secretary.
Yes, yes.
Now, Bessie was already on the, was she on the board?
No.
You, were you the first woman to serve on the General Executive Board?
I was the first woman. Dorothy came and was on that first woman. I got the picture, I'll show
you. Okay. Oh, and you're the only woman there. Well, how did you happen to be selected as the first woman on the joint board, on the General Executive Board?
Well, I was selected by the by all the locals.
Mm-hmm.
They had a vote. And all the people that were running, there were a whole lot of people mm-hmm. running. So I came out, so I was elected.
Were there other women who were running, or were you the only woman running? Do you recall?
Well, I don't recall. I think there were.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were. I don't know. I don't think they were,
mm-hmm.
because I know Sadie, Sarah Rosner and Hilda Shapiro and those girls, they were very happy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, wasn't there a women's local formed in Baltimore, maybe?
Yeah, there was a women's local.
Now, were you instrumental in helping them form?
Oh,
them?
Yeah.
What year would that have been?
Oh, that one, I was really instrumental because they had the Buttonhole Makers local, and when I had came into work in Strassen Brothers, I didn't know who in the devil they were, and I hesitate to join. So I joined them in about 1914 later on, because 1915, I would say. And Dorothy always used to say to me, you always said that you wouldn't belong to it, because you didn't want to belong to it, because it was honest, it was dishonest. And I says, well, I knew about my father. He belonged to Knights of Labor, and my father wouldn't work, and other people would go work at night. And that's why I thought that was cheating. And I went, says, well, everybody is alike, she says to me. And she was a darling. I love them all. I like them all. I really do. And I don't know what became of Marion Petrie. He was something in the bank in Chicago, and I don't know what happened.
I think he stayed in Chicago, as I understand.
Yeah, he stayed in Chicago. But still, he got something at the bank or something.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think so.
Well,
I never see hear nothing about him. And I know that Rosenblum died, and his Potoski, and his Kritsky, Richmond, Miller. I think his daughters are at the National Archives.
Oh, yes. No, his daughter is Ruth Miller in Los Angeles.
Yes, that's her father.
Right, I think so.
Yeah, you can tell her. She knows me. I'm sure she knows me.
After you were elected to the General Executive Board then Hillman sent you down here as the Secretary Treasurer of the Baltimore Joint Board.
Yes.
And then when was it that you went up to Connecticut to organize?
In 2 years' time, I didn't go up to Connecticut. My people were opposed to me going out, and they were afraid I'd get hurt. So they came up to me and to my parents, and they told them that they never put me, anything that would hurt me in very rough, that they didn't have to worry about me. And so my father says, let her go, she loves you, and let her go. And then I worked around home here, organizing people, and I'd get home late sometimes, and Mama used to scold. She'd say, every horse in the stable sleeping, she's coming home, Mama used to scold.
What were some of the shops that you organized, do you recall?
Well, we organized Strauss's, which was a big place to organize, and then we went to see some of the people from the other shops, and of course their committee took care of them, because during the war I had all I wanted to do in this big shop, in these big overcoats, and then later on another war came, you know, and
So tell me about when you organized in Connecticut.
Well, in Connecticut, I done work for No Fade at that shop, and then I had a shop down after you leave New York. Oh, not Southampton, what is that place called? Well, it was Connecticut, and then from there, all around the vicinity there, Trumbull, and all up and through there, and up around there. Waterville.
How did you go about organizing those shops?
I used to go with John Lowry. He had a car, and I used to go with him. And we used to go and talk to these people. And we used to get them, yeah, we'd call the meetings. And then we would get them out. And I went to some of the, oh, and then in Philadelphia, that was a job.
Now, was that the shirtwaist maker?
Oh, no, that was the clothing mm-hmm. there of St. Olaf. And that's why I said, women don't always get, because they put the money in. Why, Charlie Weinstein, he's not on here. He wanted to be the manager, so I had to get out. The woman said had to be smashed, somebody else. If I'm not on.
Well, what was the Philadelphia organizing exactly?
Oh, Lord, it was so hard because here was a group of the boss, Daroff, owned the shop.
What was his name?
Daroff. It was on Art Street, and Mekarensky was on Market Street, mm-hmm. way up. And they had what they call subcontracting. Now, you'd come in there, you'd be employed, and you'd be put on making pockets. Now, they were, as Italian mother, would have six daughters, or five. And they all would do the same thing, get a job there. And this contractor, they would get, do this piece, that piece, and he would get the whole piece. And he'd go home with $300
and $400. Yeah,
and these poor girls, they would go home with $7 a week or something like that. So in order to get these girls to join the union, they had to get, I couldn't go in front of the shop, you catch me there, you fire the girl, I ain't got a job in my pocket to give her. So what was I supposed to do? So I went to work and I started classes. And I know how to do a lot of nice things. So I showed them how to make good lampshades with birds on and flowers and stuff like that. I'd go to this lady's house, I got acquainted with the girl around the shop, went to their house, showed them how to make pocketbooks, showed them how to show different things. And I'd just stay there for a meal and give her 75 cents for a meal. They'd give me Dégolette to drink, and I couldn't drink it, but I had to drink a little more than that. I was afraid sometimes that they don't kill me. And I'd eat with them what they had. And the whole lot of ladies would come back, mothers of these girls that I had in another room, and I would show them how to do this and that. And then they would start talking about their employers, how bad they got it and what they had and this and that and the other. And I'd say, well, you're very foolish. Why don't you join the union? And I got two or three girls in the room. And I made a skeleton of the crate. And see, now I knew that I had to get the head operations. I crippled them. These ain't got nothing. See? So after I got them, the head ones, then we went to this and so forth. So we got them all right. And I was the question how to get them out. Because as soon as you would get up, the first step of the union, the contractor had a blackjack at his hip. See? Hit you over the head, and that was the end of it.
In the shop as well?
Yeah. And everybody was scared to death. Everybody. So the men had to work on the men, and I had to work with the girls. And Dorothy would come in, and Miss Hillman occasionally, and they would come and help me, see. And I worked with Sidney Hillman and with some of the boys, and I had all the girls around me. And every noontime, we gave them spaghetti and gave them lunch. Every noontime, and they used to give them car fare to go home. Well, everything went on swell. Well, then come a day that they had to go to get their money. And you know, they got a slick way. You come back and I'll give you wages. What do you want the union for? You've got to pay dues and this and that and the other. And then girls, they don't know none. They might fall back and go back. Monday morning, I wouldn't have anybody in there. What would be my work good for? So I went to Hillman. I says, Hillman, I need money. He says, what do you want money for? I says, I want maybe, I don't know, maybe 200 cabs. And any chairman, and I want Kritzky down there, he's going to speak and tell them that we're going to take so many in a cab, so many in a cab. It was way up on North Philadelphia, Mekarensky shop, way up in North Fork. We were down on that on the street. And so they all went in and they were told, you get your money, you go home, right from there. So they all sat in the cabs, and we had a procession of yellow cabs all the way up there. Oh, it was great, honest, it's lovely. And they all got out, you know, and then they went home. They all come back in the morning, and then I knew a friend from Baltimore, and he was related to some of them that was in another shop. And he read the Jewish portraits, and he saw my name. He came looking for me. Oh, Mamie, you here, Mamie? See, I'm a cousin to them, and they treat me so bad. I'm out, too, and I don't belong to the union, and my wife can't see. Oh, my. And then he told me something on the side. What they've done and how they're talking about us and this and that and the other. I says, look, I don't want you to tell me anything. you a Litwak, a Jew, and you go to the to my prison, sit in him and find me in the hotel, he's a Litwak, and you go and you talk to him. So he went up there and he talked to him and everything else. And then Hillman come back and he had a big meeting and he says, beginning Monday, all of you are going to get $5 more benefits. Ooh, that went high. So 3 days' time, we had a settlement. Another shot.
So they never actually walked out? They never actually walked out?
They all walked out, but how did they walk out? And nobody didn't want to go. Nobody didn't know how and when. We told them 10 o'clock at the meeting, we told them 10 o'clock at the meeting. So then I had to get a little boy, and I had to get this little boy. His name's Tony. I said, Tony, you got to blow a whistle, and I'm going to give you $50 if you blow the whistle. He says, all right, I'll do it. I'll do $50. I says, I'm going to give you $50. And if you get arrested, you'll come right down there to Bay Area. Now, honest, now, his handshake. All right, I believe you. I believe you. So I says, I've got to show you how you got to do it. Don't stand up. They hit you with the head. Get the blast you. Don't do that. I says, you've got to do it like this. And look, you've got to go like this. And see, run over to the paint shop and go, oh! And then go over to the other shed and go, oh! And then run to the other one and holler, oh! Oh! And then run out. And they caught him at the door. They arrested him. And I had to go to work and get him. Get him. I had to go to work and I had to get him out. And gave him $50 and the case was dismissed. And that's more. And after the fight and all, by the police department, they had a victory dance, and he had all the police force and everybody, and the captain from the police department, I could show you. He gave me a silk American flag. He says, I didn't have one girl arrested. They all were very happy, and they never saw anything conducted in that manner as it was with me. And they told Hillman several things. Several people spoke to Hillman. And Hillman says, that's true. Even the bosses and people outside of the state, and they says, I am only sorry that we haven't done more manias. I'm so sorry. You know, in this line of work, there's some people that we can't get rid of because they make trouble for us. There's some people that we like to keep and they leave. That's no trouble. And we are very happy to have manias. And I'm only sorry and very sorry that we haven't got anybody like manias.
How long did it take from the time you first went into the shop and started holding the classes till they walked out and they joined the union? How long did that take altogether? Do you remember?
Yes. Not even about 3 months. Without a people working in the Dallas and the Mekaransky shop.
Mm-hmm. So how many were then organized finally?
Oh, none of them wasn't organized.
Well, how many people would that have been then?
Huh?
How large were those shops?
Oh, my Lord, they were big shops. Oh, my, they had 1,500 people, over 1,500 people in some shops.
Mm-hmm.
Often both of them were over 15, if not more.
So that really led to the organization of Philadelphia? Then?
Yeah, and that's when we got and broke into Philadelphia, into that dirty scab house that was hurting all the other tailoring shops in the United States, in Chicago, in Baltimore, in New York and everywhere will point at them. They were underbidding them in their selling of their merchandise. You know, you can't do that. You can have your pie, but you got to give a piece of that pie where it belongs to one too. And that's the only way you're going to get along in this work. And that's what's matter with our country today. There's one that wants it all and give nothing to the other. They give you a razor on one end, another end they take it off. And you barely get along. I think it's a shame. Giving people $40 and $50 Social Security. How can a person live on that unless they have somebody helping them? And all right, they'll get maybe $69 or $60 from the supplementary agreement. So what does that give them? That gives them about $40-some a month. Who can live on $47 a month? Not today, especially if you are on a diet. How can you live on that? You can't live on that. And if you're in a doctor's care, he doesn't want you to eat no fat. He doesn't want you to eat nothing greasy. You've got to have food, and you've got to have lamb, and you've got to have chicken, and your medication, and your doctor bills. What do you get? Do they expect that you can do that? We're lucky that we have this house. My parents left this house to us when they both died, to my sister and to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mimi, from the time that you joined the General Executive Board, then you never worked in the shop again after
no.
that, except to organize.
I never worked in the shop anymore. I'd done all the organization work on the outside. No boss would ever have me. They were all afraid of me. Mm-hmm. They thought I was a devil, some of them. But when they got to know me, why, they all liked me. And up in Connecticut, John or Cousy could get anything out of the boss. But many, let many go, many. So I went, and I done.
Well, would you go into the shop and work in the shop first, or they knew you too well to do that, when you would go in these towns and organize? Like in Philadelphia, you went into the shop and worked for a while before you started the classes.
Not in Philadelphia.
Only you just started the classes.
Yes, I got in touch with a couple of girls.
Oh, I see.
And I met them around the corner. And I got another one going. And I was shown. I said, look. And I had a beautiful lamps. Oh, they were beautiful. Oh, I put that stuff on like beads and aimed the nice birds, big parrots on, and put the fringes around. And oh, my, and mothers were happy. Made them pocketbooks and showed them how to fire stuff and how to make the ceramic stuff and all that stuff. And they were very happy.
So, in other words, after you joined the General Executive Board, you didn't go work in the shop again at all? I see.
Couldn't. Nobody had. That's
you
when Strauss went out of business,
uh-huh.
I had no work. And then I was going to, I went to work in, yes, I went into Epstein's. And I didn't like it there, and I was going to leave there. And that's when Hillman said for me.
Now, Nini, tell me, in about 1924, I think it was, at the National Convention, there was a resolution passed to form a women's department in the Amalgamated. And Dorothy Blanca was supposed to be the head of that department. And then it just, nothing ever came of it. Do you
yes.
recall what happened around all of that?
Well, they don't like the idea. They think that the union, they don't have special privileges.
They just won't be affecting it.
They think that the union they don't like special privileges. And they don't think anybody on the board just represents girls or the men, that you represent all the people. And that is a reply.
Mm.
It isn't that the women in the organization didn't know their business and didn't want to do things, but they couldn't. They could not. And you have the same thing today. Well, you try to get a Ph.D. degree. You can be a journalist. I have a niece who's a journalist, and she's a writer. And it took a long time after she graduated and everything else before she got a job. Now she's working in Hopkins for Dr. Posen. And she gets good pay. She writes all his letters and everything. She's got a brilliant mind. I got another nephew. He's in Washington. He's an attorney. Went through the bar. Awful brilliant. And now he has private practice too. You see, but those things take a while. See, my brother has got his own land.
You see, the women within the union and within the shop did have a harder time than the men, though.
Huh?
Did you not? That wasn't the idea of having a special women's department because the women did have a harder time, and because so many of them were unorganized. Didn't you think it was important to have this women's department?
Yes, we thought it was important to have a women's department, that we could have the point, but I say again, they were mixed in different locals.
Mm-hmm.
The Italian locals had men and women in it.
Well, isn't that the idea?
And all of the cutters were separate,
local?
And the women's local had the women in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I belong to that local. I get the paper, and I don't know the number of my local anymore.
Because
I have to advance here, I don't know.
Wait. You're hooked up here.
Oh, I'm going to see if I have to advance here.
As I understand, though, I mean, some of the cities, for instance, in Chicago, the women's local formed in 1920. And I think it was earlier in Baltimore and in...
We were before them.
Rochester. Those were earlier that the women's local were formed.
Yeah.
And as I understand, the idea was because many of the women didn't like going to the meetings where there were men. Some of the immigrant women wouldn't even be allowed to go or were afraid to speak up, that it was a way to help the women get into leadership positions, in other words, to have separate women's locals.
Are they got a lot of leadership now? Are they got a lot of leadership?
I don't think very much, not really. Well, tell me how you felt about the position of women in the unions and how you were treated as a woman in the union.
Well, as far as I was concerned, I was treated fair.
But knowing that some other people got paid more than what I ever got.
So the women did definitely get paid less than.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And what about, did you do, were you assigned certain work, for instance, that the men wouldn't be assigned because you were a woman? I mean, it's traditional for the woman to be a secretary, for instance.
No.
And
no, as far as the national office is concerned, as I told you before, the elders were all right to me. They treated me fine. I can't say anything about them. Only thing is I say that I do know of some cases where people were considered probably more than what I was given for quite a while.
And how about Dorothy Belanca also? She was very active.
Yeah, Dorothy was a nice girl.
Yeah,
she was nice. Dorothy was.
If I understand correctly, there was a fight, because in fact I saw a letter that you wrote Sarah in about 1928 about this woman's department, because there was a resolution passed by the convention, and I think it was 24, and then Dorothy Belanca was made the head of this woman's department, and she was going to go around and organize in various cities. And what happened exactly with that whole woman's department?
Just fell apart. She was the head woman. She didn't go. I never knew anything about it. They didn't write to me no more. They didn't know much about it. Just didn't know. And when I was a member of the General Executive Board, it never came up. And then when I asked one time about it, and they said that there were no special privileges, that the women and men were treated the same. We just don't represent women. We represent the organization. And the men represent the organization also, men and women. That's all.
How did you feel about it? Did you think it would be important to have a special women's department?
Well, I thought it was, and then again, I thought, didn't know. Because with women, it was like this. They had babies, they don't want to attend to meetings, and who have you got? You can't get people out. And then sometimes even the shops. Now, I worked up in Massachusetts, and there was a Court and Peabody shop, and they made the Arrow shirts. Am I off?
Yes, no, it's on
that. I don't like to have that too much on. They made Arrow shirts. I like to have that off.
Okay.
We ought to be very thankful for it.
You're saying that the women were absent more often and would
yeah,
turn off more.
Yeah, that's right. And sometimes they were sick. They were not able to come in. And you know how for some women, for every little thing they have, they stay out. Now, I never stayed out at all. I got through all of my business fine. I missed the men's day. I had to come home 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. I had to go way up to New England, way up to Maine, and Hathaway shirts. And then I used to go there quite often. And then I sometimes would go up in Worcester, Mass. And then sometimes I would go down to Norfolk, as I forgot before. And that was when I was in Connecticut. And then I all up in Connecticut and all the vicinity.
And what would you do when you were traveling around Connecticut?
Calling meetings to people, talking to the people. But they already were organized. But you had to have a meeting and tell them what was going on and give them the reports and all. See, but up in Massachusetts, I had to start an office. It was there.
How did you go about starting the office?
Start an office? Huh. I went and got in touch with some of the people there that I knew. And we started an office. First, we organized the people. I had a group that they knew me. They were in the boys, too. And we had to have a place to meet. And I didn't want to meet in saloons where some of the men wanted to be. That would have been the end of it, because the husband would let the wife to go, especially Italian men. So I went and got a nice office. I got a lovely secretary. She was here this Sunday. She was in Philadelphia now. Margie, they all know. And there's one auditor in New York, and he always asks about Margie. I think that Isa knows her, too, Goldberg, Margie. And then there's another fellow that he knew and asked about Margie, because she was a number one secretary. I had a lovely office. Isa and Goldberg can tell you. They all know me. They know my past. They know how I act. They know everything.
Yeah, and then you set up your office, and this was to call the meetings?
That was the office where we had our local meetings. And when they had any trouble, they would come to the office. And then when they were sick, they filled out a form. The secretary was there. I had a secretary, because I had to go sometimes out. I was on
I was born in June, I could go then sometimes, and then when I was on the executive board, I had to go up to Maine and then places, and Salerno was the regional director then. Now he left, and I always thought Gumba Bull, so I didn't like that guy for nothing. And come about, so he was so sure he was going to get Joe's job. And I don't know where he's at, but I know that other lady's got the job from National Office. She's a staff lady. You should know it.
No, well, I don't know the people out here at all, in the national office here. I just know the people in Los Angeles.
Oh, I know, Los Angeles.
Well,
who's the manager in Los Angeles?
Well, the man who was the manager, I think.
I know Graham.
Leonard Levy, I think, is going to, is the head, and they brought a manager in. Tell me, as a single woman, you had to travel a lot and would go into cities to organize. What sort of reactions did you have as, in those early days, especially as a woman traveling along doing this?
Well, I would get a few people that I knew, made connections with different organizations and churches and different places, and then I would tell them what they can get from the union. I said, if you belong to a union, you have strength. If you're alone, you ain't nothing. You can't get a darn thing. Told them the manufacturers have their organization, doctors have their organization. And I said, the policemen and the postmen and all have unions. What have you got? You got nothing. You got a job in one hand and you kick out in the next, your pocket, I said. And I said, now this is what the union gives you. Now you can do that and do that and do that. And they were afraid to do it. You had to go to work and have a bunch that you should have a backing. And you had to be careful not to get the smaller operations, get the main operations. And when you got the main operations, you had them tied up.
Mm.
That's how we did it.
How many would you have to have ready, say, in a shop before you were able to really get the shop organized?
We had to pull one shop after another because it was too many.
Mm.
The big shops. And then, of course, the small shops, we got them too. Didn't have many small shops in Philadelphia. And we didn't have many small shops. There's some small shops in Connecticut on outside of Bridgeport and New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of small shops. Go up there quite often. And that's all.
Now those were primarily shirt shops.
Yeah, all up through England was shirts. Outside of one shop that made the pants,
mm-hmm.
And that was nice. They were nice employer too, and they were very very fine people, and they made wonderful shirts and pants.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a big factory. It's in Leominster, Massachusetts.
Now, how long did you stay on the executive board then?
About 13 years.
So just until 1933?
Yes, about that time of 35, something like that.
And then, you were a vice president on the board then?
Yes.
Well, and did some other women join the board during that time?
No, there was nobody.
Mm-hmm. You were the only woman the whole time?
Yes. And then after that short while, after all, they got a woman from the South. She's on today, Emma, I don't know, whatever her name is. And then Joe Solano, he retired, he's down in Florida. And he has it's another lady that he put on. And
well, what,
she has charge
why
of
why did you leave the General Executive Board?
Because the General Executive Board, they didn't want to increase it. And they wanted to put a man on from the state that had supplied the money to organize that.
I see. Then what did you do while you were on the General Executive Board then, you organized in New England and you organized in Philadelphia?
While I was in General Executive Board, I organized Philadelphia. Yeah, and also helped up in Massachusetts. And then sometime in Massachusetts, when I first came to Massachusetts, I think that they had talked this over and somebody else's head would have been mashed and they disrupted. So I was approached and asked not to run, because if I had run, I would have been elected.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody else's head would have been probably hurt. Somebody would have been hurt badly. So I didn't get any more money. And it was just an honor to be there. And I thought, well, if they wanted somebody and if it would help the organization, which is so hard to build and very easy to destroy, so I'll step aside.
Uh-huh.
That's my motto.
Now, what did you do after you left the General Executive Board? What sort of activities were you involved in?
After I left I done organization work in different cities. I had the same pay and organized on Long Island, made speeches, and was on picket lines where they had strikes, and organized a shop in New Haven, and then we had several other small shops in Connecticut, and we organized all them.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you then paid and worked out of the national office?
Oh, yes.
I see.
I was on the payroll of the national office until I retired.
Ah.
And then I get a pension from the national office.
So you were considered, what, did you have a title or anything?
I'm a national officer. I was one of the national officers.
Oh, even after you were no longer on the executive board, you were still one of the national officers?
Yeah, I was still one of the state national officers, yes.
I see. And that was until you retired?
Till I retired, mm-hmm. Yeah. They always treated me the same. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, I haven't got any flaw with none of them. I think the Amalgamated is one of the most decent organizations that there ever is. Now, I don't, there may be others, I can't know much about them, the latest garment workers, they do a lot, and then there is the steel workers, what the man next door belongs, he gives me their paper to read, and different things, but I went through with this personally, so then I know, and I know what it was to not to have, and what it was to have when you worked in that shop. When you worked in a shop before the union, the Strauss and Brothers, and we made buttonholes, such close work, and we had to work overtime till 4 o'clock on Saturday, and you had your lunches on sill, and all that heat on there, how could you eat that lunch? And then there was another shop that we organized here, and the people worked 30 feet below the sidewalk, and when the wind and storm come up, all the dirt would go in their face. We organized that shop. And then we had picket lines around there, and everything down there. But we organized like an industrial building, see? And then the girls used to be on jumping machines.
What is that?
Pressing pants.
Oh.
And they would jump on those machines. None of them could stand up straight. They had the appendix.
Mm.
They had the appendix out, and they all couldn't bend over. And all was terrible, filthy. They had the stuff on, they had the things on the shelves, and it was all filled with all kinds of germs and worms and dirt. And when they would come morning and pick up a coat, and a big rat, the sewage was next door, their great big water, a big rat jumped up, and the boss would say, well, did you never see a rat before? And the girls had to work, of course, and I went to work, and I took about 40 girls to Mayor Jackson, John Mayor, and I said, Your Honor, I am here on my mission to have you to listen to these girls who are all Americans, and so am I. And we gave you, most of you, you had our support when you ran. Now we want you to hear from your clientele. And he says, what is it? And I says, it's in regard to the shop. So the girls told him. And then we had a doctor there with us. And this doctor, he says he couldn't eat for 2 weeks when he heard the stories of those girls. And then none of them could stand up straight. They all stood like this. Well, they closed the place up. We were on strike and they wouldn't let no inspector in to see it. And they were painting it and fixing it up. Well, now today, it's an organized place, and it's all right. Mm-hmm. It's all hachi-tachi.
What year was that you went to the mayor? When was that again?
That was a little before 1920.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that's the shop. Now, those poor women getting all that dust in with these rats. The rats were this big, some of them. And when I spoke down to the Catholic University, those students thought it was terrible. And then the priest down there, he put up to them, and they each gave me a dollar. And he gave it to me. He says, now, I don't want you to give this to Amalgamated. This is for you. You owe me. He says, they think you're lovely. And I stayed overnight, and I should go down there every summer. And I got 3 scholarships for the girls to go down there to the summer school where they taught labor. 3 of them stayed overnight. They enjoyed it. And I should go down to speak with
them. In the earlier days, did you ever go to
Bryn Mawr?
Uh-huh, to Bryn Mawr?
Yes.
Oh, when was that? What year did you go to Bryn Mawr? Do you remember?
Ask me. I don't know. we went to Vermont. I think I was in Philadelphia, and that was in 1918 and 1919, sometimes that.
Now, what was it like at the Brynmawr Labor School?
It's very, very nice. I didn't go right to the school. I had to sit with the students, but the students were there, mm-hmm. and the teachers certain things, and we used to sit under a tree, and five of us had one teacher.
Mm-hmm.
See? But I did enjoy Hopkins, Dr. Bildis Mitchell. He was a socialist, but he had the real idea,
mm-hmm.
you know, labor and management. It's easy to go to work and call the boss SB and call him and get all excited. The next day you have to go deal with the same man. So there's a way, he says, you can point to people.
Mm-hmm.
I had one employer, old man. He was a real old man. Don't put that off. I can't say anything. Some people just hate him. I'm not like that. I want to know the truth of the thing. Because people are sometimes, they don't know. Oh, they can see just what they can get on the false pretense. And you just can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't point a gun at one employer and make him give less and let the other one get a rebate with it. When it's an increase, you give it all. And everybody should get according to their means. I'm not like that. And I got along with the national office, and I think the national office is great. And I hope that they make good, because they're always organizing and they're always making progress and they're always getting more money for the people. And always doing something, even in these hard, crucial times, they do. And now when the high cost of living was high, why, they considered all of us a little bit more. I don't care, it's not much, probably, give you $5 a week more on your pension. It's only $5, it's spit in a bucket. It's nothing at all, 2%. But because I'm out of the organization 19 years, and nobody's paying them for anything, they gave us that. I appreciate it, but I do think for the years that I had given, I think that I would deserve more. And I say that, and I say that in all sincerity, because I never put in big expenses like some of them did. I lost money. It was $40 a week to be away from home and work all the years up there, $40 a week.
Mm-hmm.
They, because I lived in a place, in a hotel, and because I never gave them no food expense bill, and they paid for my hotel. Well, Lord, they couldn't expect me to sleep in a cow flock. I had to have somewhere to sleep. They knew it, but it was some of them other people who felt like that. See? And I really was worth more than that. I really was, and they know it. They know it. They have greatest love for me, and they like me, and that's the reason I say I have nothing but them. I think Sidney Hillman and all of them are very nice. Too bad that most of them are dead. And I hope the movements will be just as good, because I think that the president and the other one, the secretary, is all right. And I hope some of the new members on there will not forget the back of it. They can talk about it, they can read about it, but they never walk the dirty, dusty roads to the factory in snow and hail, give out leaflets, call a meeting. They never went through that. They never. And I am surprised at the age of 86, which I am, that I am still here.